Hello, and welcome to another episode of Alec Mappa Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. Ho, 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 happy holidays, everybody. You know what the holidays mean? The holidays mean time off, which means we don't have a show for you today, but we have one of my favorite shows, one of my favorite episodes. We have Ross Matthews on the program today. We recorded this a while back, not too long after he had lost his mother. Now, this isn't one of my episodes, my favorite episodes, because I'm into grief or I'm into sadness. Grief is something that we're not exempt from. All of us have to go through it. All of us. Now, you know, if you live long enough, you're lucky to live long enough. At one point, you will experience loss. And it's important to talk to other people who've been through the same things. And I lost my mother a while back. And so that's allowed me to be a better friend to other people and to understand where people are when they're sad, when they lose somebody, and giving them the space to do that, giving them the space to grieve their loss. So it seems like a weird choice for the holiday, but trust me, it's a good one because during the holidays, I mean, even during the holidays, we're not exempt from loss or grief. So we explored this topic with Matthew and Ross. Matthew and Ross, what are the coincidences? What are the odds? We explore this topic with them in a loving, humorous way. Enjoy the show. And don't forget, we have more episodes coming up over the holidays. We would not abandon you during the holidays. The Hot Mess Pod won't do you like that. Enjoy the show, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Hello, I'm Alec Mappa, and welcome back to another episode of Hot Mess. Oh, that's terrible. Okay, start again.
Just leave it in.
Welcome back to another episode of Alec Mappa Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. I'm Alec Mappa. I'm an actor and comedian, and I live in Hollywood.
And I'm Matthew Dempsey. I'm a multicultural counselor and psychotherapist.
I'm never going to get that right. Multicultural counselor.
Yes, multicultural counselor. What's so confusing about that?
I don't know. I just called you a psychiatrist earlier because I was like, no, I'm going to introduce you as a fireman next week.
Right, right. Not a psychiatrist because I don't prescribe medication.
You don't prescribe medication. Can you tell people like you need meds or can you recommend?
Well, I mean, yeah, for sure. I would refer people if I think that there might be something else kind of going on with like kind of, you know, neurologically speaking. Yes.
Mm-hmm. My therapist prescribed meds for me 3 years ago. He said, yeah, it's time.
Yeah. Okay. So your therapist was a psychiatrist.
No. He sent me to a very fancy psychiatrist.
Gotcha.
And that had like a 6 month waiting list. But I got in after a month. I was like, I can't wait 6 months. But he's like the Gucci of psychiatrists, and he
fancy
set me on the right path, which lends itself to this week's topic, which is grief.
Yes, it is grief.
Now
yes.
That we're laughing, let's talk about grief.
Let's really dial it back a moment. It's getting too late. Yeah. Understanding grief. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Working through grief.
Working through it, understanding it, feeling it, processing all the
time. Now my philosophy is that there are several stages of grief, or that grief is like a wave. It's not like, I remember that after my mother passed away when I was in 1992, she died young. And there were days where I would be perfectly fine and able to go through my day. And then days where I was rendered immobile. Like I was so sad. I couldn't move. I didn't want to do anything. And I realized that that's just the way it goes. There are some, you have good days and you have bad days.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. Grief is something that does come in waves, and that it comes in stages. So kind of the most popular theory for grief is the five stages of grief. It's by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross that came back, you know, last century. It's DABDA. That's how I remember it. DABDA. It's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. But actually there's somebody else named, David Kessler, who came out recently. He was a student of, Kubler-Ross, and just came out with a book recently about how there's this kind of like sixth stage where it actually then adds meaning, where we want to find meaning, not just acceptance as kind of the final moment, but actually giving it some new meaning. It almost kind of brings it to like kind of a spiritual realm.
Giving it meaning.
Giving now, it what, meaning.
What would that look like? I'm just checking to see if I did it.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's about just kind of, you know, it's getting to a place of acceptance, of understanding that, you know, whether it's a person or whether it's a situation or circumstance, you know, whatever it is that we're grieving, that not only that we achieve a place where we can feel acceptance of the fact that that no longer exists in our life, but we actually attach meaning to it, maybe something that we're able to pull from it, right? And so, I mean, honestly, I would say probably the, I would say I'm actually in the, probably as most of us are right now, in the throes of my own grieving right now because of everything that's going on this year.
I don't know. What's going on this year? Is this a weird year? What are you talking about?
Okay, so I see you're in the denial stage, Yes.
I can stay in denial for a really long time just because that's my default position of functioning. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
I know you're sad, but like what
that doesn't surprise that doesn't surprise me, Alec, because you're you're constantly going. It's always it doesn't really give a chance for us to, at times to just kind of sink into the
And the biggest lesson I've learned is I'm so hell-bent on being happy. Like I really work at my happiness. I'm pretty disciplined about it that I forget that part of being happy is acknowledging my own sadness.
Can I tell you, that's actually probably one of my biggest pet peeves of humanity. Anybody what you're talking about, what do you mean? this like incessant need to always be happy. It's just like,
what's wrong with that? Are you happy shaming me, Matthew?
I'm not happy shaming you. I'm broadening the scope of what healthy functioning as a human being looks like. Happiness is one note of such a broad spectrum of what it means to be an emotional human being and a creature on this planet. So why would we want just one note? I mean, listen,
because you weren't raised as a middle child who was trying to keep peace in the household. That's why the pressure wasn't on you. Aren't you the oldest or something?
No, I'm the youngest. I'm the youngest. I'm not a psychiatrist. Alec, get it together.
You're the youngest. And so you never had to like, everybody just loved you from the beginning. It's like you were just the, you were the baby. There was no emotional responsibility placed on your shoulders.
Alec, you don't even know what I do for a living. You're getting my occupation mixed up. You don't know my upbringing. You don't know my constellation. Yeah. Anyway, but it does kind of drive me crazy because happiness.
When people want to be happy all the time.
Yeah. It's just like, get out of here. You know,
it's not authentic.
Well, it's not authentic. No. How could anybody be happy all the time?
And when I think that what I say, I'm disciplined about my happiness. I think that happiness is a decision that you have to make.
I disagree.
You disagree?
Happiness is not a decision. What is a decision is the way that we think about things, the way the framework that we put around our experiences. So our thinking, but our thinking, our thoughts are different than our feelings and mood. So if we have a situation, like let's just say in a general sense, right? Kind of like everything that's going on right now. Shit is going down. Things are changing. There's like massive overhaul, culturally speaking. So we're all grieving. And so we're all going to be moving through a lot of shit. And so there's going to be things like, you know, depression is one of the stages of grief, right? So we're going to be feeling really down. But that doesn't mean that we can't at the same time put a positive framework around it. That is the work, to be able to say
that's
things like—
That's what I'm talking about.
But that's different though. That's different than happy. For us to be able to say, okay, you know what? Like, this is a really shitty time, but I know that growth hurts. I know that it can be painful. I know that there's something good on the other end of this. That's a positive framework to put around it. It doesn't eliminate sadness. It just keeps it from turning into, you know, kind of like immobilizing depression.
Well, that's what I meant. I meant like putting a positive thing. That's a decision.
But I think people get confused when they say like happiness is a decision. You should be happy all the time. It's like, no, you shouldn't.
I don't believe in being happy all the time. No. And people who are happy all the time give me the creeps. It's kind of like, what's wrong with you?
But
my favorite quote about happiness is Carrie Fisher. People are always asking, you know, before she died, you know, she was dealing with a lot of mental illness.
Yes.
And they would say, are you happy? And she goes, yeah, among other things. So she had a sense of happiness as being part of the whole.
It is.
And I do as well. But I think what I'm doing is I'm trying to combat my natural impulse to brood. I think that I can. I'm a brooder.
How do you brood?
Well, I mean, meds have helped. and my own therapist, I don't know if he's a multicultural therapist, but my own therapist, he says, you can spend time with your feelings, however they are, but just have coffee with them. Don't spend the whole fucking day.
I agree.
And
with
see,
that.
But previously, before meds, I would spend the whole goddamn day.
Would just sink into it. You would just down in whatever it was.
So the decision to reframe my thoughts and to kind of, you know, put a positive spin on things or, you know, what can I think that's the decision I make every day.
Yes.
I didn't articulate as well as I did. And now daddy's mad at me.
Well, that's what I'm here for, right? To help kind of decode some of this stuff and make it a little bit more digestible and understandable. But yeah, for sure. It's like because you don't want to, like you said, you don't want to be a victim to things. You want to be a student to it, right? Like these things aren't happening to you. They're happening for you. So you get to check in on them and let them be a guide.
What, say that again? That's so good. Not happening.
Yeah, things, I mean, listen, our circumstances aren't happening to us. You know, they're happening for us. They're giving us an opportunity to learn something.
To us. They're not happening to us.
Yes.
They're happening for us. I love that. And on that note, I think we should bring on our guest to talk about grief.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I'm so excited that he's here today.
I am grateful too.
That he's doing the show. I hope his audio's worked out. We had issues with him earlier.
Yes.
Why don't you start in with that intro?
Okay. All right. I am actually really excited about today's guest. He's an incredibly gifted television personality. He began his career as a correspondent for The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, of course, as much of us know. He became known as Ross the Intern.
And he became a big star. He appeared on Celebrity Fit Club, Celebrity Big Brother, and he's currently working on one of my favorite shows, RuPaul's Drag Race. He's now hosting a weekly podcast called Straight Talk with Ross, and he's the author of two wonderful books, which we'll talk about during the podcast. Please welcome our fabulous friend, Ross Matthews.
I think I got it to work.
Whoa, crystal clear.
Everybody, welcome to our fine program, Ross Matthews.
Yay. Hello, my love.
I love you. You're the only other man I know who gets misgendered over the phone as much as I do.
Oh my God, over the phone. How about this? How about every drive-through I go through, right?
Yeah,
I'm the only car and I say, you'll have a number two with a whatever. And they're like, pull up, ma'am. I'm like, oh my God. And 4 seconds later, I pull up and they look at me and they look behind me. Yeah. What? They're so confused.
Where'd your mother go?
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Ross, today is, we're talking about grief on the Hot Mess podcast today.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, we have to express our condolences. I know that you've had a loss recently. Your mother passed away.
Yeah.
Yes, she did in May, end of May. And, you
so
know,
sorry.
Thank you.
So
sorry, and thanks. And we, you know, very, 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 very close. So this has just been awful, you know, especially in the midst of a pandemic when it feels like hugs are illegal. Mm-hmm. Grieving is just extra difficult. And I have some experience with that. I lost my dad 16 years ago and now my mom, and it's just awful. It's awful.
Yeah. I think there's such a special bond, I think, between especially gay boys and their moms, and just kind of like in like a unique way. So what was the bond like with you and your mom?
Crazy. I mean, we talked every single day. She was like my biggest supporter and, you know, everything from anything in my life that I needed to sort through to, you know, how do I make the meatloaf again? Like, what is that recipe? And, you know, it was everything and everything in between. There wasn't anything unsaid between us, which was wonderful. And I find very soothing in her absence, knowing that we were good, but like, I also, every single day, reach to text, you know.
Yeah.
The best part of my day is when I forget, and the worst part is when I remember.
There's, you know, what's so funny is I lost my mother a long time ago. I mean, talking 25 years ago, it was, I don't know the math on this, maybe even longer than that, 27 years ago. And it doesn't go away. It becomes a part of you. I mean, that's really the only thing I can describe it. I've grieved so much. And we'll talk about grief more in a second. But what it's turned into now is kind of, it's a scar. It's a part of me. It's never not going to be sad. And what's weird is I think about all the major events of my life that my mom missed. You know, she missed my wedding. She missed me adopting a kid. And that's very sad to me. But what I'm grateful for is my mom got to see me on Broadway. She got to see my dreams start to come true. And I'm certainly sure that was true for you, Ross, that your mom must have gotten such a big kick out of your success.
Yeah, she loved it. I mean, she when I first started on The Tonight Show, you know, that was back in 2001. We grew up in this farm town up in Washington State. And it was like, you know, neighbors, family, the mayor, everybody come gather around my mom's TV to watch me. As, you know, the years went on, it was almost like, oh yeah, I DVR'd it. I'll get to it. You know, it became less important. But she was very, very proud. But what, you know, she also taught me a lot about like, what's really important, which is like how you're valued, how you find your own value. And so I think she thought I was a good man too, which happier.
What did she teach you about that? What were those lessons?
Well, she taught me to be good. She taught me to be true to myself. She taught me from the very beginning, and you may be hearing my gardener who's right outside my window right now, which is just, isn't that the way the world works?
Yes. White lady problems.
Yeah, totally. Yes. Thank you. The leaf blower situation happening. My mom raised me with, I think, the key to success, which she always sort of made me feel like, why not me? As opposed to why me? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people sort of criticize their kids to the point that kids think, do you hear the leaf blower? That is so loud. I can't. Hello. Hold on. Should I do the thing where I ask him to move?
And now the dog's I mean, he'll eventually stop blowing.
Yeah. I mean, it's perfect. This is called Hot Mess for a reason.
Every time someone told me that. All right. This is the one time I wanted somebody to stop. Okay. Well, I don't know what to tell you. Now the dog here understand kids. See, now normally someone who wasn't well-balanced would freak out in a moment like this. But my mother made somebody very well-balanced. Enough! Down, daddy loves you, but stop it.
See, this is what we love about the Hot Mess podcast. It's all about authentic emotions and experiences. Yeah. And I had the same mom. I mean, the way my mom phrased, why not me, was what's stopping you? You know, I want to be an actor. Well, what's stopping you? Is it frustrating? She would always, I would call and I'd bitch about the lack of work or what, you know, why this person got that. And I, you know, it's so frustrating. And she'd always ask, what's stopping you? And that was her version of why not you? And what I read from your books, Man Up and Name Drop, which are both available on Amazon, they're both super enjoyable.
Thank you so much.
Is that you grew up with two parents who really valued you. And from the time you were a kid, you didn't have the kind of traditional parents who like see a gay kid and see that as cause for trouble. It seems you were valued by both your parents from the very beginning.
You know, I think I'm really extraordinarily lucky. I mean, there were bumps in the coming out journey. You know, my dad didn't quite understand. He was like very much a machismo hunter mechanic, you know, and I would go hunting with him and read Little House on the Prairie, you know, as he like shot birds. And I would go fishing, but I would just go for the, you know, grape soda and the red vines. I was very lucky in that my dad quickly got there. My dad quickly understood and really tried and wanted to. Mm-hmm. And my mother, when I finally came out to her, she said, you know, you sit there wanting to come out to your mother and you really think that you're with. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. This is happening still.
This is too personal a conversation. Your mother is like telling your dogs to bark.
Yeah.
Okay,
hold on. Hold on one sec.
Hold on. Oh, one sec.
None of this is going to be edited out of the show.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, it's like, of course, at like the most intimate moment of him coming out to his mom and what his mom said, and then all of a sudden barking.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much. You're so thank you. You're very thorough. Okay. Can you go that way?
That way. Thank you. Hi. Mm-hmm. All right.
So when you came out to your mother.
Yeah, what was I saying? Hold on.
You were talking about when you came out to your mother.
So when I came out to my mother, you know, that moment when you're coming out to a parent, you really feel like maybe you could lose their love forever. You know, you're risking that. And unless you're gay, you kind of don't get that moment. But it does feel like being my authentic self is worth what could possibly
I could potentially lose, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I said to her, "Mom, I'm gay," she said, "Oh, honey, I know. Didn't you already tell me?" And I was like, "No, this is my story. I would know if I already told you." And so, but she didn't care from the beginning. I was very lucky that way. And you know, you hear horror stories, but that's one of the reasons why I miss her so much is because she just loved me as is.
Yeah.
Screaming with the dogs, with the gardener, a total mess.
Right. But, you know, it's like the people who go before us leave those values and those ethics with us. And you had that lovely article about, "I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to be like her." And that's very much me and my mom too. My mom always made everyone feel welcome in her home, and she would seek out the shyest person at the party and say, "Come help me in the kitchen."
Yeah.
And by the end of the evening, that person would be her new best friend, and they'd be talking, and she'd really draw them out of their shell. It's like those are the things that I think, Matthew, you were talking earlier about when grief takes on meaning. I think that was it for me. It's like, as a parent, so much of my mother is a part of my life now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not just getting or achieving a place of acceptance of the loss of that person, but really being able to add that extra layer of meaning and about how just the experience, not just the loss, but obviously the relationship, added something to your life and brought it to a new place.
You know, it's interesting hearing you guys talk because you're in such a different spot than I am, and Matthew, you know a lot about this process, but I'm like, still feel like I'm under the blanket, you know, like every morning I wake up like, oh my God, and I'm a happy person, but this process has just been really, really difficult. And I know it becomes part of you, and I love that description because that's how I feel about my dad, but this is still like the practice of missing her.
Yeah.
And I thought it would become easier as it became more normal, but it's just become more difficult. No,
this is brand new. I mean, in the way that we used to grieve as a society is, in the Western society, even you would wear a black armband for a year, or our women would dress in widow's weeds for an entire year, which meant that for an entire year, you were given the emotional permission. You were given the societal permission to be in the emotional space of grief and sadness. And other people would see you in black or see you with the armband and kind of recognize and respect that.
Yeah.
And right now, the way death is processed in Western society, it happens in a hospital. Mm-hmm. It happens away from us. We don't see it, you know, and we don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, there's no talking about it. And there's not like a whole lot of room for us just to be able to feel the things that we're feeling, you know, and especially in this culture, and even just like the concept of toxic positivity, I think also lends itself to what makes it challenging for people to properly grieve, you know, like this idea that if you just think, you know, kind of frame things in a certain way, think about things positively, then that should remove any emotional discomfort. And there's no way. It just helps us manage it so we can move through it to allow ourselves to feel it.
People always ask, "How are you doing?" And I always say, like, "I'm not doing well, but I'm doing well. Like, I'm doing a good job grieving, but I'm not doing well. Like, cause it hurts and it's so sad, but I'm feeling it." And I think that is good.
Yes. I wish that it was so much more acceptable in our culture where we could say things like, you know, like, "How are you doing? Like, you know, honestly, I'm kind of depressed today. I've been depressed for the last couple of weeks. Like, I think I'm doing okay, but I'm like depressed."
What a bummer.
Just to
That's the last time I'm inviting her to brunch. Jesus.
Exactly.
Just a hypothetical question. I really didn't want an actual answer.
But Alec, to the point too, right? But when you are a funny person, people don't want to hear that kind of stuff either. Do you feel that, or at least maybe you think they don't? I have had to I've had to allow myself to respect everybody more than I thought I did because I hear myself thinking they don't want to hear that. And I think maybe they do want to hear that.
But you
maybe
know what?
Give them a little credit.
There's something to that it's easier to talk about it with people who have been through it. Yeah. You'll want to surround yourself with people because for death, for a lot of people, it's an uncomfortable conversation. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about death. But, and also I feel like when you said that it just happened to you, I mean, you wake up every day under the covers. When you said that, I remember that so clearly because for the first year when my mother passed away, I felt like, one, pissed that the world was going on as it should. I would look at people going, how can you go about your normal activities when my mother's gone? And two, the shock of it, I really honestly felt the subjective feeling was any moment she's going to walk through the door. I still felt as if, and it's not based on reality, but it was based, there was a feeling of, I would still reach for the phone during the day to call her if something weird happened, because that's what we always did. Or the subjective feeling was she's at some point, this is going to be over and she's going to just walk through the door. Mm-hmm. Do you feel anything like that?
I don't. I feel like I can't believe she's gone. Like, mm-hmm. It's almost like I can't understand it, you know, like all of a sudden 2 + 2 = 20. And I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't compute.
Like you intellectually know it, but emotionally not.
Yeah. I just can't fathom it. It's so hard, you know, and it's, there are times when even yesterday, you know, I was like shooting the show and it's like, you know, a dream. I can't believe it all. You know, I was thinking, having this moment, it all came true. I'm so happy. And I get in my car and then I cry because I can't call my mom. And, you know, it's like there, I just can't reconcile, how high life can be and how low it can be. I just, you know, I'm just having a hard time with it, but I don't think I'm having a hard, I think this is what you're supposed to do.
Yes, this is what you're supposed to do. Yeah. Ross, do you mind if I ask how your mother passed?
She had cancer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was it really kind of like a long, kind of like drawn out process? Yeah, she had a couple
years treatment and went into remission. And then it was, we found it was in her brain and back everywhere and lungs and everything. So, and she did get to die at home. We did hospice at home though. So I got to like be with her and I got to be with her with my dad. I held both of them as they passed away, which was a beautiful gift, but it's like tough to like, it's not about me, but it's tough to keep that inside, you know, and have that, those images, but I'm grateful and
And so how, I know that you were saying you kind of feel like it's just, that you're just kind of like under it. Like how else are you feeling right now? Like today specifically?
It's like I told you, like the best part of my day is when I forget that she's gone and then I remember, and that's the worst part because, and the thing about grief I find is that those periods are longer, you know, but every time you remember, when you reach to grab the phone or something, it's the same, it's like 100% of the pain, you know, it's just less often you feel it.
I just remember the feeling so acutely, just kind of like waking up and being like, oh, this is still real. Mm-hmm. Like just waking up and like, oh, this is still real. And the last time I felt that was after Trump won. It was awful. It was so awful. And then I woke up the next morning and I was like, oh, this is still real.
Yeah.
This is still.
That was a real surreal moment.
Did you regret voting for him?
Yes. Well, you know what, Ross? Honestly, he's almost lost me. He's almost just one more thing. I'm telling you.
One more he might lose supporting my thought. Yeah. A racist. One more. he could lose our.
The thing that helped me is kind of like my support group of friends. Do you have touchstones around you that you can talk honestly and openly and you don't have to pretend?
Completely. I'm so lucky. I mean, I'm so lucky. I have a large group of friends. You've been able to meet some of my friends.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
They're great. And some friends I've had since school. So I'm very lucky. The issue is why this is extra hard is because it's a pandemic, right? So I'm like alone with 3 chihuahuas. So I haven't really hugged anyone. You know, it's just, I can Zoom a friend or something, but it is very isolating.
Yeah, for sure. So what are you doing then? I mean, just like Zoom and that's it? Do you have anybody that's kind of like in your pod, as they call it?
No, no one in my pod.
No one in your pod?
No, I mean, no. My friends are all, maybe because I'm in Palm Springs a lot, so everyone's really elderly and no.
Nobody's taking that risk.
A high risk group. So not really a pod, no. But Zoom, and I'm back to work. You know, I've been shooting since mid-July. And so that has been a wonderful distraction, you know?
Yeah. How is that working out in this time of COVID? Because I'm about to go on another shoot in September. I want to hear how things are on yours.
It's bizarre. I can't, yeah. They won't let me talk about what show it is, but you can do the
math. You don't have to talk. You can just tell me about the COVID protocol.
So I'm tested every 2 days, right? Mm, whether I'm on set or not. If I'm at home, somebody comes and shoves a thing up my nose. Mm-hmm. Every 2 days, every like multiple times through the day on set, my temperature is taken. Yeah. We're in like double masks. When they come and do my hair and makeup, they're like in bubble wrap. Mm-hmm. And then on set, we're like between each of us, we're 6 feet apart and there's glass walls between us on the show.
On the show. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so it's very bizarre. Very bizarre, but it's become normal now. It's been, you know, over a month and a half, going on 2 months, we've been shooting like this. And at first it felt like I was on Mars. Mm-hmm. And now it just, I don't know if I'm happy that it feels normal, but it does feel normal.
Yeah. Ross, actually, one of my favorite things that you've been doing on Instagram has been the cooking that you've been doing.
Segments. We got to talk about that.
Okay. First of all, can I just say that I actually just kind of was like stumbling through some of your stuff and was like, oh, let me just check out his cooking thing. It's like 15 minutes or something. I'll watch a minute or two. I watched all of it and then just kept watching more of them.
You did.
You're so good with it.
Oh my God.
Didn't know a jicama wrap existed, but
I'm not eating a jicama wrap, by the way.
It's amazing.
You're not going to make me eat it.
Lettuce wraps, but now I'm turned on to jicama wraps.
Go today. Don't wait.
Yes, I won't.
They're at Trader Joe's. I cook every day. I really do. In my last book, Name Drop, I had cocktails and recipes, which were little happy hour bites. Mm-hmm. So I make recipes all the time and I'm just me. And so I was doing some food videos before COVID, but then it's like, what am I going to do? Hand my phone to one of my chihuahuas to record? No.
Yeah.
So, but I finally got this tripod that is like a Steadicam and follows you.
Yeah.
You on the screen, you draw a square on your like face and then wherever you walk, it follows you.
But the best part of this though, is that when he's doing it, it doesn't always 100% follow him. So we have to go back and be like, hello, pay attention to me.
I know. C-3PO, I'm over here.
I got to name the robot. I'm going to name her Lazy Susan because she's lazy.
That's Alex's nickname.
I did just one the other, another week or something. And people like loved it. So now I'm just doing them because
I love it. Cooking. And you're just saying, oh yeah, no, coconut oil is good. It's a good fat. That's what people say. I don't actually know.
I don't know. I'm not qualified to do this.
But you've lost 20 pounds.
I mean, 26 pounds
since, more appropriately.
Because I found that grief pizza was a real thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so after my mom passed, I just sort of went to my horrible habits and I just was adding. So I wanted to stop the bleeding because one thing you learn when your parents die is that you know you'll die too. And I'd like to postpone that as long as possible.
Yeah.
So early July, I've lost to 20, that's 20, almost 26.
You are also, I mean, you also talked about how kind of like the relationship with your mom and food and cooking and stuff. So is any of that part getting expressed? Is there any kind of processing through things by cooking, kind of in her honor?
I'm sure, you know, I haven't thought about that, but I'm sure that maybe that's why I love cooking so much is because it was a connection. You know, I would call her and ask her and tell her what I made and send her pictures. And maybe because I did help her in the kitchen, you know, because my dad and I weren't we didn't have much to bond over. So I would always be like a little sous chef. So I hadn't thought about that, but I think that is a way to
I think that's incredible. And honestly, as I was saying, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, I love those cooking segments. And there is this certain kind of like magic that comes through as you're doing it. So.
Well, you're good at that. I mean, you've been doing this for a really long time and I've hosted talk shows where you've appeared, you know, that Gossip Queen show that I did with Lonnie Love and you just walk into the studio and you kind of own your space and you own who you are. And it immediately puts everybody at ease and you're so good at it. When you're on shows, this is a question about you and your mom. When you're on shows, when you're on the red carpet, is there a part of your personality that, of your mom's personality that comes through?
No.
No?
my mom did not. She did not like attention. She was curious and interested, but not inquisitive. Mm-hmm. And so we were very different. But she was so nice, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that part comes out because I like to be nice to people.
Right. You were never a mean queen. You're always kind of really good at establishing rapport right away.
Yeah.
In your book, you talk about all the celebrities you've interviewed. And what I really enjoyed about the last one is you talk about the interviews that go badly. And then you give us the YouTube link.
Yeah. So you can study it like the Zapruder film. You guys can go in.
Here's what it did though. You posted that one in one of the chapters about how Matthew Perry and what's the other one?
Matt LeBlanc.
Matt LeBlanc were nasty to you. Mm-hmm. And I watched it on YouTube and they look horrible. I immediately stick up for you. And I was like, God, that was awful. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because it's a great story.
I own the follow-up
at the end.
Okay. I own my part in this. You know, when I was doing these Tonight Show pieces, it's like, I was not a trained comedian. I was literally in college and they go, oh, fun. Let's send you out, you know? And then it becomes not, oh, fun, let's send you out. It's like, okay, you need to get a 6-minute piece from where you go with no writing, no anything, just off the fly. And it's going to be shown to 6 million people and it's got to be back by Tuesday. So all of a sudden it was like, what? So I felt this pressure. I got to deliver or I'm never going to have another one again. And I always felt like that until I got a contract. If this doesn't work, I'll never be on again. Mm-hmm. So that's just the feeling, right? So you kind of push hard when it's not working, right? When I'm at the NBC 75th anniversary party. It's probably 2004, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe earlier. Mm-hmm. And maybe three. And all the stars of NBC present and past were there, like Cheer. I interviewed like Rue McClanahan and Betty White. Norm from Cheers, Barbara Eden, the guy from Get Smart. I mean, like, I didn't
Everybody.
Know who
yeah.
some of these people were, right? I was like, great. So then, you know, all of a sudden the Friends stars are there and I'm losing my mind because this is the height of Friends. Like 25 mm-hmm. million people every night are watching mm-hmm. Friends every Thursday. Huge. Matt LeBlanc, Matthew Perry come up and I'm like, amazing. And so I say, hello. Like, I'm so excited. And I said, hi, I'm Ross. And they go, no, isn't that Ross? And they point at David Schwimmer. And I was like, oh, funny. That's funny. And then I said something like, are you guys excited or something tonight? And they just like looked at me and then they pointed at me together. Uh-huh. And then they looked at the camera and they said, Jay, what are you thinking with this one? This is not long-term thinking, Jay.
It was really mean. It was like, it was kind of homophobic in the watching of it now. It's the subjective feeling is like, this faggot, yeah. really, Jay? That's how it comes across.
So then I say lame things to try to get out. I said, are you making fun of me? And then I was trying to get out of it. And then they just kept pointing at Jay, be like, Jay, not a good idea. What are you doing?
What?
Yeah, this is not.
Did it feel like it was that flavor of homophobia?
I mean, now if it happened, I would say, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah. That would be the appropriate response now.
But not when you're an intern
and it's 2004.
And I have $400 in the bank and I'm like working, you know, trying. And so it was tough and they were really, really mean. And I write in the book that I was, I didn't want my mom to see it. You know, it felt like high school. It felt like the same way every straight guy tried to make fun of me in high school. And mm-hmm. I couldn't, you know, in high school, I would have told him to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
But I couldn't. I had to, you know. So that always kind of bugged me. Cut to 10 years, 12, 14 years later. I don't know. I'm, you know, still on TV. Friends has been off for a long time. But they have like $100 million each, so they win. Yeah, but here's the deal. I'm covering the red carpet for the SAG Awards for E! And I'm live. And then it goes to commercial break and I like stop and I'm talking to my producer and I feel this tap on my shoulder and I think it's someone from our team and I turn around and it's Matt LeBlanc. Mm. And I was like, hi, I haven't seen him since.
Yeah.
And I was just like, hi. And he was like, hey man, can I talk to you for a second? I was like, oh, shit. And he was like, I don't know if you even remember this, but like forever ago, I met you on a red carpet I was so rude to you. And I saw it like the next night and I just felt like shit. And I've always wanted to apologize to you. And I always said, well, if I see him again, I'm going to apologize. And I was so in the moment of work and everything. I just was like, what? Oh, thank you. Oh, I don't even really, oh, that's so, thank you. That's so sweet. I don't really remember. And he left. And then after that, I was thinking, God, I wish I really would have told him that it meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
Because it did.
Yeah.
It did mean a lot to me. And it showed how much the culture had changed, right?
Yeah.
It showed how much he had changed. And I thought it was very cool. I'm still waiting to hear from Matthew Perry.
Matt LeBlanc, I think we have time for one more anecdote. The other part, I just love your book, and I keep it in the bathroom, so I reread it a lot. How's that for an image? This was when you were covering the Olympics, and you saw when Caitlin was still Bruce.
Yes.
And the greeting to you was, "There's Matt."
He goes, she at the time identifying as Bruce, but she said, "Well, there's Ross, just living life however Ross wants to live it." Mm. And I was like, "What?"
Yeah. It was like an accusation.
I write in the book. It was an accusation. It was wrong.
Yeah. And, but also at the time, she was Bruce, not living her life in the way that she needed to.
Exactly.
And so I write about her and you know, I would always go to the Kardashian Christmas parties, and you could sort of, everything was kind of evident before it was in the news. It was like, are you? And and then after everything, you know, that she transitioned, which I thought, you know, is amazing. It's a lot of people talking about trans issues for the first time what Caitlin did, which was great.
Yeah.
I remember talking to her on a staircase once about how after Trump won, how excited she was and everything. I was like, "Are you out of your mind? Like, this is not going to be good for you." And she was like, I don't know. I think it is. And when the first time I saw her after the transition, I said to her, there's Caitlin living life just the way she wants to live it.
Did she catch the reference?
She laughed. I don't know if she remembered, but I did.
Yeah. I would have said, "Remember when you said that to me, dummy?"
I actually said, "Why didn't you talk to me? You didn't need to be alone in this.
I remember
an ally. Yeah. I was here." And she said, "Ross, I couldn't even be truthful with myself."
Oh my God. Totally. Like, I remember being in high school and there were a couple of gay kids out, and it was like, they were the furthest, you know, away from me. Like, I wasn't going to get close to that, because you have to deal with your own stuff first before you can even welcome that in otherwise.
Yeah. So we wouldn't have been friends in high school, Matt. You would have steered clear of me completely.
Yes,
well,
exactly.
You know,
I was straight in high school, so we would have been total bros.
There you go. Brosives. We always, I want to talk to you forever, but I want to recommend your books. The first one is Man Up, which is your whole story, and your parents feature large in it. And also Name Drop, which just came out last year. You were nice enough to send me a copy. And it's a fun book. I love all the recipes in it. And there's gossip about the late Jackie Collins and Chris Kardashian and every single celebrity you've ever met. It's a really, really fun read. And you also have your own podcast, Straight Talk with Ross, available everywhere.
Yes, and you've been a guest on it before. We've been going almost 6 years now, 350 episodes or something like that. It really is a fun show. So catch up on that. And I am so proud of you. I really am so grateful to be on your show. I've been seeing the people you've been having on here, and I love that you're having funny conversations and serious conversations. It's all the feels, Alec.
Yeah, we talk about real stuff. So given what you're going through right now, we always ask people, do you have a hot message right now? If there's anybody who's going through what you're going through right now, what would you want to say to them?
I don't know. I don't think I'm qualified, but I'll tell you what I've been trying to do.
Okay.
You know, it feels to me like we're losing 6 months of our lives, right? With this whole pandemic situation. Mm-hmm. I want to come out of this having gained something. I don't want to lose. I don't want to think about it like that. You know, we've lost too much. So I would just encourage everybody, when this ends, and there will be an end to this, figure out what you want to have gained in this time, right? Have you always wanted to read that book? Have you always wanted to write a book? Have you always wanted to learn this? Have you always wanted to get healthy? Have you, whatever it is, do it. So when we come out of this and we're back to normal life, it doesn't feel like you've lost something. It feels like you've gained something.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're very qualified to give the hot message of the day. And I think that's perfectly appropriate for what people who are going through what you're going through right now. And we all go through it. None of us is exempt from this stage of our lives. It's a part of our life and you're going through it. Please know that I'm your friend. I've been through it. You can call me anytime. I'm your neighbor. I live near you. And we love you. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Ross.
Of course. You guys, I'm so happy. Thank you so much, my loves.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, "Hey, we're the Bravo Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo."
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Oh, it's pretty wonderful.
I love it.
I think that it's kind of like when you were talking about earlier when I said that happiness is a decision and then you yelled at me. Don't
we're
hurt
learning.
Me, Danny. What I really meant to say is how you articulated it is the decision to positively process it or to look at it in a way that somehow benefits you. And I think that's what Ross is doing right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think kind of what he was saying, and maybe this could be my hot message of the day, is just being able to maybe kind of find some meaning in it. And I think the meaning that I'm making out of a year like this or any kind of real loss is how much are we actually able to just sink into, lean into what we're feeling and accept what we're feeling. We can adjust our thinking so we can be positive, but actually just, you know, becoming a little bit more familiar and a little less afraid with whatever it is that's going on for us. I love the way that Ross said it earlier when he was saying, you know, he's like, I'm doing well and then I'm not doing well. That both of those things can be true at the same time. We can be struggling emotionally, but also have the right thinking attached.
Both things can be true.
Yes.
Dialectical behavioral therapy.
Obsessed.
We should do a whole show about that. That would be really, really great.
Yeah. We can. I'll be honest with you. Well, I sat through an entire conference on DBT, or it was like a 2-day training.
Okay. All right. Yeah, Never mind. We won't do it at all. Matthew, where can people find you on the social media?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at MJ Dempsey Psych and Matthew J. Dempsey Psychotherapy on Facebook.
And you can find us both at the Hot Mess Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We want to hear from you. You can find me at Alec Mappa, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. DM us both. Let us know how you're enjoying the show, how much you love us.
Yeah. Affirm us. Validate.
Don't forget to download and subscribe. We here at the Hot Mess Pod know you have many choices when it comes to being entertained. So we're so grateful and humble that you chose to spend your time with us. Tune in next time. We'll have more fun. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
This has been a Stage 29 podcast production. The podcast is executive produced by Patty Ciano, Laferne Cusack, and Stephanie Kaysen. Our audio editors are Jackson Ruff and Jonathan DeMatti. Callie Kiltz is the social media producer, and a special thanks to the rest of our podcast crew, Rwani Horinagay, William Cusack, Lisa Clark, Katie Brown, and Morgan Kaler.
This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the hosts and guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.